welcome you from wherever you are locked in right now.
Yeah, my people you love so.
Those locked in from near and far.
I see.
Those on tune in radio.
Oh, yes,
on a night shift to DJ Kevin Stew, welcome to you.
Illusions. I see them.
I want to say big ups to those who are locked in out of New Jersey.
Of confusion, I see them love.
Hanging out to New Jersey's finest, the motivator.
Illusion, I see them love.
Oh, yes, welcome, welcome, welcome. Glad to have you. Couldn't do it without you. The sound of Nikki Blaze in the background.
Yeah.
I see them love.
Oh yes, I see them.
Lost in illusion.
Lost in illusion.
I see them love.
Oh yes, I see them.
Lost in delusion.
Why some crazy things going on here on my website, you see?
How they reside in the state of confusion. Why is it that
my website's still confused?
My race sitting on the jail floors. My race fighting to knock down.
Yeah, Nikki Blaze, that is what is going on over here.
Though from across the shore, my race that built this great nation still.
I want to say big up to those who are locked in out of New York, those on Reggae Pulse Radio, those on out of Long Island, New York. Getting a couple messages here. On Reggae Pulse Radio.
And now they reside in the state of confusion. Rwanda, Haiti, down in Darfur, Jamaica.
I want to say big ups to those who are locked in on the Foundation Radio Network, ClintonLindsay.com.
Why can't we come
out of South Florida? Help. Mr. Lindsay, big ups to you, sir.
It only takes but one to start a revolution. Please don't play into the illusion.
Did I big up a massive on reggae and island worldwide?
Oh,
home of China Nicole, she started off the broadcast.
So, in a state of confusion.
A track called Let It Be for Justice, I tell you.
Wake up, wake.
When things go haywire.
Yeah.
Oh. Is it because today's the 13th? Oh, what's going on?
I see them loud. I see them running, running, running. Oh, I see them running. Oh, my people lost. Oh, oh, my people lost. Yeah, yeah. I wanna tell it to you now, now. Oh, I see them lost in the blues.
I wanna say thank you to Jenny Nicole and the Jump Out production crew. Gary, big up yourself, sir.
Illusion, yeah. My people you love so. I see them love.
Oh, yes, I see them.
Of course, thanks to the Pulse Media Group crew.
See them love.
Thanks to those who are locked in on Facebook Live.
And now they reside in the state.
Those of you who found me on YouTube Live.
I see them love.
Oh, yes, I see them.
Thank you for tuning in.
I see them love.
Yeah, a whole lot of things happening in the last minute of the broadcast, before the broadcast came on. And let me tell you, if you've done some of these broadcasts, sometimes there are things that throw you off, that just throw off everything.
Yeah. I see them love.
Oh, yes, I see them.
Lost in
illusion.
I see them love.
Oh, yes, I see them.
Lost in delusion.
I want to say thanks to those who are locked in on PEMGTV.com.
Died in the state
those right here at the home of the night shift to DJ Kevin Stew, KevinStew.com.
Remains poor, my race sitting on the jail floors. My race fighting to knock down.
Those who are on Clubhouse, those on Facebook Live.
From across the shore.
Still inviting you all to call a friend, tell a friend, friends of your friends of your enemies, enemies of your friends, and your enemies too.
Serum love.
Oh yes, I see them.
Those on Facebook Live, those on Clubhouse.
Illusion.
Use the link in the description.
Love.
Oh yes, I see them.
The link pinned in the comment section.
Illusion. And now they reside in the state.
Come on over to KevinStew.com because it's not an entire broadcast that you get over there on Clubhouse or on Facebook Live. It's only a segment broadcast.
Crying out for murder.
And tonight we're talking about being in prison.
Together and help one another.
You know what it is like being a prisoner?
Revolution.
Let me see if I can give you some insight. Some life inside the prison system in the United States. I want to say thank you to my segment sponsors. Pulse Media Group and Begin a Moment is priceless. Let's go ahead and get him a call.
Wake up.
They'll take care of your videos, your photos, your streaming, your ads.
Oh, I see.
You have an event you want to stream live on a secure platform, whether yours or theirs.
I see them.
Yeah, get them a link, 754-999-1140.
See them running.
You want to do something like I have here on KevinStew.com?
Oh,
they can hook you up with that too.
Hey, hey,
754-999-1140. Call them up. They can do your church services, your funerals, wedding, parties, graduation, seminars, you name it.
Yeah.
Once you can stream it, they can give you a solution for it. When you call them up, tell them Kevin Stew sent you, yeah? I want to say thank you to Althea and her healing heavenly hands. Althea is a licensed massage therapist operating out of Broad County, North Miami, and South Palm Beach counties. She comes to you bringing her oils, her table, and over 20 years massage therapy experience.
I see them love.
Broad County, North Miami-Dade, South Palm Beach counties.
Illusion.
She'll come to you. 954-655-9000 is the number that you call.
In the state of confusion, I see them love.
Lost in illusion.
I see.
I want to say thank you to the family over there at the Global Base. The Global Base has 30 years experience in the music industry. 30 years of public relations, marketing and promotions.
I see them love.
They do music production, event planning, entertainment management. You can get them a call, 954-804-8199.
And now they reside in the state of confusion.
You can check them out online, theglobalbase.com.
Remains poor, my race sitting on the jail floors. My race.
That's D-A, Global, B-A-S-E, the Global Base.
Race they stole from across the shore.
Call them up, 954-804-8199, and tell them Kevin Stew sent you. Thank you to McNeil Trucking.
I see them love.
Oh yes, I see them.
Lost in illusion.
Lost in illusion.
I see them love.
Oh yes, I see them.
Lost in delusion.
McNeil Trucking is a veteran-owned, licensed and insured mover in the state of Florida. So you want to move from the Keys to Pensacola? From Naples to Jacksonville.
In Darfur, Jamaica, they're crying out for murder.
Pompano Beach to Palm Beach.
Why can't we come
moving some things into storage?
One another. It only takes but one to start a river.
Anywhere from as far north, you can go in Florida to the Keys. Call them up, they can help you move.
Yeah,
954-8406-9740 is the number to call.
Confusion. Wake up, wake up, wake.
Tell them you heard about them on the night shift to DJ Kevin Stew.
Oh, I see them love.
what's it like for some people in prison? I wanna touch you now. Well, I went searching for some info. And the Marshall Project has an article. Yeah, I see the lost, oh, lost in delusion. Yeah. This one is People You Love by Jerry Metcalf. And it's called A Day in the Life of a Prisoner. The person who was going to be my guest tonight that was called away on an emergency, she spent 15 years of her life in prison. And if you're checking the archives on kevinstew.com, you'll see other broadcasts that I have done with those formerly incarcerated. Mostly talking about how it was that they ended up being incarcerated in the first place. And so it comes from a slightly different place, and we would have had the opportunity to learn Lisa's story, what it was that got her in prison, what it was that she did while she was in there, how she lived in there, and her life since being out. And so we're gonna look to reschedule that for you guys. All right. Emergencies happen, and unfortunately, sometimes they just throw a monkey wrench in everything, your whole plans, you know? But I do want to thank those of you who managed to jump on, and apologize to you if the reason you jumped on was to hear Lisa's story. And so we're gonna make do and see how best we can get through this tonight, you know, with the makeshift edition of the broadcast. Now, people are constantly asking, Jerry writes, what's a day in prison like? Is it boring? Are you busy? So, the other day, I toted a pocket-sized notebook with me everywhere I went, scribbling down every single thing I did. I thought I'd share my findings with you to show you that we prisoners are not deadbeats. Our days are, in fact, incredibly full. At 1:30 a.m., he starts out, I'm jarred awake in my cell by an officer wielding the brightest flashlight in the world. He gives me 10 minutes to throw on some clothes and escorts me to the isolation cells, where I strip down again for a thorough search and begin a 3-hour suicide watch. This is my prison job. To sit with inmates deemed suicidal and just talk with them and make sure they don't try anything. What a challenging job that is. Just hearing that this is this person's job, that's scary. And so it's not up there on a list of fun things to do, in my estimation. And, whew, so you're in prison doing time, and your job is to watch other inmates, to sit with other inmates, to make sure that they don't do something to make their time cut unscheduled, to be cut suddenly, short, I should say. That's quite a task. So, you get to be an in-house psychologist, kind of, an in-house comforter. What do you call that? 773-789 still gets you in touch. 773-789-7839. If you know someone who's been in prison and is available right now that could give us a little bit of insight about what that was like. I know a few people, but calling them up at the last minute to come on and tell their stories, you know, that's kind of rough. And so I opted not to go that route, but to go this one. The 18-year-old black kid I am assigned to on this day is soft-spoken and severely depressed. Jerry goes on to say, I'm a 43-year-old white and white. He opens up surprisingly quickly about the many horrors of his childhood. He has lived a very hard life, which is typical for incarcerated people, but is always deeply upsetting nonetheless. I almost cry several times. There's not much I can do for him except to just listen. So I do as if this young man is my own child. Shift over. I'm strip searched again and escorted back to my housing unit, where I take a quick shower, stretch, meditate, pray, then climb back under my itchy wool blanket and hit the sack around 6 a.m. I wake up at 10, thanks to all the hooting and hollering outside my cell. I take a few minutes to center myself, climb from my top bunk, and I'm met by my service dog in training, Ross. As I dress, Ross wags his tail and prods me with his cold, wet nose, which never fails to make me smile. I then hike down the rock, or term for the cell block, to the communal ballroom I share with 48 other inmates. Brush my teeth between four young kids who are rapping. Handle my morning business on the toilet and return to my cell once again, where I pour Ross another bowl of water, buckle my pouch full of treats, then venture back out into the bowels of our unit with the dog in tow. We spend the next 40 minutes training him to follow my commands. Now, I grab my tablet and a cup of instant coffee and hurry to our jp.com, a prison email service kiosk and computer encased in damn near indestructible stainless steel, which is my only window to the outside world. You might see in some groups, or you might have gotten a message from someone who is incarcerated, and there's a JP website or link that's associated with that. This is where this inmate, Jerry, has gone to communicate with the outside world. He goes, there I pay a guy a ramen noodle soup for holding me a spot in line. Then plug my tablets in and upload and download emails. Once I finish, I jog over to our unit's kitchen area, where I wait in line to use one of two microwaves shared by 96 convicts. Luckily, I'm able to heat up my coffee before I hear 5 minutes till count time, people, blaring over the PA system in the same dull, unsympathetic voice that has spewed these words multiple times a day, every day for years. Be on your bunks and visible. I repeat, be on your bunks and be visible for 11:30 count, or you will get a ticket. During count, I write a few emails to be uploaded later. And listen to the news on the radio as I lie in bed, waiting for the guards to make their rounds. I then throw on my workout clothes, a pair of tattered pants covered in patches. Shrug on my state-issued winter coat, and stand by my cell door, waiting for it to open. Count times in prison are an imprecise science. And this is from a convict's point of view. Sure, they start at the same times each day, 5 a.m., 11:30 a.m., 4 p.m., 9 p.m., and midnight. But when each one might end is just about anybody's guess. It's basically purgatory. On this particular day, I get lucky. Count is cleared at 12:10, which means I'm out the door and on the yard by 12:20. I usually pick this time slot to head out to the yard because it's virtually empty. Most times, most inmates are inside right now having lunch. I run a few miles, do pull-ups, push-ups, sprints, and finish with weights and stretches. Quite the workout routine, I would say. When the prison opens its massive razor-wired topped gates at 144 controlled mass movement to the yard, I head inside like a fish swimming upstream through a river of convicts. Hundreds of them. At times like these, I need to stay hypervigilant. In such a crowd, a man could get butchered and the guards wouldn't know until they discover his bloodless corpse lying crumpled on the walkway after the crowd had passed. I duck and dodge, pausing a few times to say hi when someone calls out my name. Imagine that happening for a moment. This is this guy's life. Day in, day out. And in this moment, he talks about a point in time where it's considered the most dangerous part of his day. Because he's not moving with the crowd. He's not moving with the masses. And even if he was, based on this description, I know some of you have seen movies, you've seen shows about prison life and such, but these are the words from someone who had been living it. And so, this point in time alone, if none other, is very scary. And it's scary because the part right here where he says, you'd be dead and nobody would even know it. Because the guards would only discover you're bloodless. Which means you'd have been shanked or cut and you'd have bled out completely before you're discovered by a guard. When you consider the mass migration of inmates from one area of the prison to out in the yard, where at this point in time now they go spend their the rest of this moment or this portion of their day. And as I'm reading it, I can just picture it. And I don't know how long Jerry was in prison for him to be able to have his own time, or if it is something that they schedule. I don't know prison life like that. And with those that I've spoken with about their wrongful incarceration, I've more looked at what it was, the process of them ending up in prison, and what it's like since being out, than, and on occasions we'd talk a little bit about what's it like inside? And here it is. Jerry is telling us his story and walking us through what it is like a day in prison. So, safely back in his housing unit, Jerry goes on, I mark my place in line for the shower. And there's just one shower. And he marks his place by dropping his towel and soap dish outside the stall. He goes on to say, I then fix myself a bowl of instant oatmeal using our hot water dispenser. Stir in a spoonful of peanut butter and a handful of cashew, almonds, and sunflower seed. Mix a cup of hot milk, well, powdered milk in this case, and missed my spot. Here we go. Powdered milk. Dig a few bananas out of my locker, which, well, the bananas were purchased on the black market. They got their own inside thing going on. Then sit down to enjoy lunch as I await my turn to bathe. The shower is the one place I'm guaranteed to find solitude, if only for 10 minutes at a time. By now it's around 3, so I grab another cup of coffee, return to my cell, pull up to the desk that my bunkie and I share, and study Spanish grammar before doing some writing in my native tongue. Sometimes fiction, sometimes poetry, sometimes creative non-fiction. Today, it's fiction. From 3 until 6, I soar free. I delve into my fantasy world and live vicariously through my protagonists as they experience love and loss, battle evil, and fight to make their world a better place. I'm forced to pause for 20 minutes, though, while I jump onto my bunk for 4:30 count time. At 6:10 or so, I roll out of the herd of orange and blue-clad convicts heading toward the chow hall. We wait in one of two lines that snake between long dining tables lined with small circular stools as guards below. Tuck in your shirts, gentlemen, or you will get a ticket. We eventually arrive at the filthy, food-splattered service counter, where Trinity, or privatized food service contractor, Trinity ladles us a tray of grey plop, and they call it turkey a la king, a rock-like biscuit, and some canned green beans overcooked it into a tasteless, scentless mush. I choke down what I can, then scram. The chow hall, too, is a dangerous place to linger. After dinner, I teach a writing class that usually lasts about an hour. Today, it runs over because we actually have quite a lot of fun learning the difference between active and passive voice. Around 8, I call Mom. At $3 per 15-minute phone call, $3 is almost twice my daily pay. I can only afford to speak to her once or twice a week. Quickly and efficiently, with skill, honed over many years of phone company abuse. My mom fills me in on her life. Her feet hurt from standing up all day at work, and she is getting a new roof on her house. And talks about my brother David's upcoming wedding. It's going to be beautiful. As usual, a robotic voice suddenly breaks in. You have 1 minute remaining. Thank you for using GTL. Mom often cries. Sometimes I do too. Then our phone call is over until next week. At 8:30, I take Ross out the back door of our unit for his final potty break. I then jog upstairs to the microwave area, heat myself a ramen noodle soup, and pop myself some popcorn. 9 count hits. This is my chill out time. For the next 2 hours, I sit on my bunk and slurp noodles and crunch popcorn while I watch TV and read a book. Day complete. I kill my TV and lamp, stretch, meditate, then pray, and finally burrow my way under the itchy woolly blanket again and doze off. One more day down. Somewhere around 3,650 to go. Jerry Metcalf, 43 years old, incarcerated at the Thumb Correctional Facility in La Paz, Michigan, where he is serving 40 to 60 years for a second degree murder and 2 years for a weapons felony, both of which he was convicted of in 1996. This is a day in Jerry's life. This is how he navigates this space that he can only refer to as home. Because this is his home. And there are more stories like this. The next one I'll tell you is by Adrian Dre Paul. And he tells his story of being down in a wastewater treatment pit. And in the it's captioned, I had a crappy job in prison. Well, that's not exactly how it's captioned, but that's how I'll tell it. And he talks about being down in a wastewater treatment pit where he kept shoving the black liquid toward the pump with a squeegee. I'll tell you this story when we come back from the break. While we're off on the break, those of you on Clubhouse, those on Facebook Live, this is where we're going to part company. Until we meet up again, of course. You can still call a friend, tell a friend, friends of your friends of your enemies, enemies of your friends and your enemies too. We're on right now. Right here, the night shift with DJ Kevin Stew. It's Community and Finance Night. And we're looking at being in prison. The last time we were on live, I asked the question, what's the purpose of prisons? And typically we get the what happened before going in. We get a little bit of what happens inside or how it goes inside or what it may be like inside sometimes. And then we get what it's like since being. Tonight, I'm trying to share some insight as to what it is like inside from the perspective of one inside. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Posse Media Group, innovative streaming and recording, has done it again. A new way to get your business in full view of your neighborhood consumer through AdShare TV. It's available in your neighborhood today. It's easy. Just call us, 754-999-6020. Become a host today and place a TV monitor in a strategic location so it's easy to see. Get a 1-minute video ad or longer that plays anywhere in our network. Can't be a host? No problem. For a few dollars, we'll run your 30-second video ad. A host can run announcement specials like buy one, get one free, or discount ads. Let's turn your flyers into a 30-second video with music, or a voiceover, or let us create and run your video ad with a spokesperson. Take advantage of our early enrollment discount. Join us today. Your ad will be seen at least 30 times per day in your AdShare TV neighborhood. It's easy. Just call us, 754-999-6020. AdShare TV, part of Pulse Media Group.
In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, in math, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, in biology, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. And stupid. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one
In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid.
In English,
and in math,
I
learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
The
only thing I didn't learn...
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Ladies... lovers, lovers of the music, it is here, the brand spanking new album from Ed Robinson and Ian Sweetness, a tribute to Teddy Pendergrass. Amazing. 10 blazing tracks, 2 amazing singers going hit for hit, classic for classic. A tribute to Teddy Pendergrass, Ian Sweetness, Ed Robinson. Oh, man. Is out now, available everywhere, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your music, it is there. A tribute to Teddy Pendergrass, brand spanking new, Ian Sweetness, Ed Robinson. Ladies, gentlemen, you've got to have this in your collection. Get it now, available everywhere. Bruv, my last baby already gone off to college, mate. Is what did she send come gimme, man? Is that big album still, I love it. Big up Ed Robinson, Ian Sweetness, but this better come with a contraceptive.
Hey, I'm representing for DJ Kevin Stew, working on the night shift, the night shift radio show. Won't go changing like the weather, just to please the devil never. Will DJ Kevin Stew sell his soul? That's a word and honor. It's Christine representing Word and Honor, Celestia DJ Kevin Stew.
I want to welcome you guys back to the broadcast. It's coming to end Finance Night right here on the night shift to DJ Kevin Stew. Thank you to the affiliates. I want to say big up to those who are locked in onto the UK One Harmony Radio. Top of the morning to you guys over there in the UK. King Genius, Queen Genius, much love to you. Thank you. In the background, the sound of Cesar. A track called Morning in Gideon. New Jersey Massive, NIE Radio. Out of New York, Island Worldwide. Exhibiting the power of music. The Foundation Radio Network, ClintonLindsay.com. Out of South Florida. PEMGTV.com, Reggae Pulse Radio, Zeno FM. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Those of you on Facebook Live, this is where we part company. Those on Clubhouse, thank you very much. Do this all again. But we got more to go right here at the home of the night shift to DJ Kevin Stew, KevinStew.com. Thank you guys for hanging out with me. 773-789-STEW gets you in touch. 773-789-7839. You can call, text, WhatsApp, or Telegram from wherever you are in the world. I don't think that you're limited to just in the United States or anybody from the Caribbean. No, no, no. Anybody from anywhere. Lock in, log on. Of course, you can jump into the stew pot on kevinstew.com. If you're wondering what the stew pot is, it's what others call a chat room. But because we're fancy, we call it the stew pot. Just come on in and be a part of the broadcast. You don't need to register off our firstborn, an internal organ, or a blood sacrifice. Just visit the website and you're in. You can remain anonymous with that number. Or you can change it and put your name. Personalize it, yeah? A couple of things that I had failed to let some of you guys know about and to remind others about. 8390 challenge continues. The 7-8-390 challenge is where you save some money to get to a decent little bit of a savings at the end of the year. You can save by the month. So it started in January. The 7-8 part of the challenge starts with $10 and goes up by increments of 10. So each month that you're in, the quick way to remember it, each month that you're in, you multiply that month by 10. So February is the second month. This month you should save $20. So you start with $10 in January, $20 in February. Put away $30 in March. And it goes on till you get to December, where in December you make that sacrifice and you put away $120. At the end of the year, you should have had $780 put away in savings. Now, that is $780 that you probably didn't have last year. But just by doing this challenge, and it's not a challenge that you're going up against people anywhere else, but just you, you're challenging yourself to see if you can have this money at the end of the year. Now, if you can't manage multiples of $10, you do it in fives. But the concept remains the same. So instead of putting away $120 at the end of the year, you put away $60 in December. And your combined savings would turn out to be $390. Yeah, that's the 7-8-390 challenge. Get on board. There's still time. And do get your copy of the book. Whether you get the audio book, or you literally get a copy of the book. But with the audio book, I want to encourage you to get that. It was narrated by yours truly. Yeah, authored by Jonathan Field, narrated by me, Kevin Stew. And if you go to kevinstew.com, you'll see a copy of the book cover. You can just click on it and it takes you to exactly where you need to be to download your copy of the book. It's called Empowered: Essential Concepts and Strategies Every Woman Should Know About Self-Defense. So go and get your copy, gift a copy to someone. We records, information is one of those things that you can never have too much of. Thank you, Cesar. Cesar in the background, track called Morning in Gideon. So, talking about being in prison and getting stories from behind bars and what life is behind bars in the United States prison system. This one is by Adrian Dre Paul. And it's titled, I Have a Crappy Job. And he's being quite literal. He says, my muscles were in agony and getting too weak for the work. My shoulders were on fire. My back ached. Keep pushing, the city contractor yelled from high up above. I was down in a wastewater treatment pit in a central Georgia city and kept furiously shoving the black liquid toward the pump with a squeegee. We had been down there for hours, starting early in the morning and working through our lunch break, which would have been 2 hours ago if we had gotten it. My forearms screamed in pain, but I kept going. It was definitely shaping up to be another trying day on the prison work detail. The liquid was comprised of broken down solid waste. It was liquidized human feces and garbage. I had no idea what chemicals they had shocked and treated it with, if any. And I was met with only vague answers when I asked. It was black, heavy, hazardous sludge. It was also filled with worms and who knows what other parasites we could not see. The pit was 15 yards across, and we were about the same distance below ground. The towering concrete walls on all sides were only about an inch from my shoulders at various times. It was not for those who are faint of heart or claustrophobic. And although the sunlight didn't reach us down there, the heat sure did. In the pit, it was even hotter than the temperature that day at the surface level, which already was close to 100 degrees. We were in rubber boots and a full bodysuit that absolutely did not breathe. Then I felt it. I became lightheaded and dizzy, and my vision began to blur. I was so thirsty. Cries of keep pushing from above began to seem distant. I leaned my squeegee against the wall. I was not going to pass out in this toxic liquid sewage. I groped my way back to the ladder and looked up. I had to make it. I began to climb. I had been through no choice of my own, on a work detail at a Georgia prison for more than a year now. The prison had 4 contracts with 3 different local towns when I first started, providing me with a variety of tough tasks, cutting grass in city parks and on roadsides in extreme temperatures, clearing out sewage line overflows, digging trenches to replace broken water lines, and manually cutting pathways through dense woods. But today, the state of Georgia was determined to get the most out of my forced free labor. Today, I was on the detail at the wastewater treatment plant for the grand prize of $40,000. A guard told me, paid by the city to the prison. We inmates were at the mercy of the city contractors. any task they required of us, we were to complete without complaint. Refusing to work on detail resulted in a disciplinary report on your institution record, which would negatively impact your prospects for parole. Refusal to work also brought you a night or two or seven in the hole. After which, of course, you'd be put right back on detail to continue making money for the state. Georgia is one of five states that demands unpaid labor for its inmates. The state which makes an awful lot of money off convict labor. Georgia Correctional Industries, or GCI, is a multi-million dollar industry making household products, raising livestock, harvesting produce, and contracting with many city services. We learned of GCI when we did the last live broadcast talking about the purpose of prisons. But here it is, one of the contracts that we talked about that night. And when we heard Jerry's story, we heard him talk about, and he's in Michigan, so we hear him talking about getting paid, and that $3 is twice his daily pay. So at least he makes about $1.50 a day. But that was Jerry. This is Adrian. And he is working for the city. The city of, well, Lai. He's contracted through the prison to clean up the city of Georgia, the state of Georgia. Wherever it is, the contract takes them. So, if the contractor, if the prison is paid $40,000 on a contract to do this cleanup, what does the contractor get? Things that make you go, So, when answering the question of the purpose of prisons, here is something that you might want to take into consideration. When I reached the top of the ladder, Adrian continues, I climbed out gingerly and hobbled over to the cooler to hydrate. I had been pushing this heavy, putrid liquid since the morning, and I could feel my body starting to shut down. As I took off the top part of my bodysuit and the shirt I had on underneath, a cascade of liquid gushed forth from just one arm. It was sweat. Then another man on detail, who was loudly proclaiming that he was about to pass out, took off his rubber boot and turned it over. In all my life, I have never seen a waterfall of sweat pour out of a man's boot like that. I tried to grab hold of my bearings as I sat on the ground and propped my body up against a lawnmower. About 10 minutes whizzed by, then I heard it. Inmate. A city contractor was leaning over the pit and pointing over at us. She called and pointed again. Inmate. And then jabbed her finger back at the hole. My name. That's what it was. Inmate. To her, I was two hands, two legs, and an underfed torso to be used at will. She called again and repeated her aggressive motion, using the whole arm to punch her finger through the air and down toward the pit. I peeled myself off the ground and put my shirt and sludge-covered bodysuit back on. I began to descend the ladder. The sunlight was fading as I went down. It gave way to shadow and darkness. This was Adrian Draypoil's account of one of his days on work detail in a Georgia correctional facility. He was 30. Incarcerated at Carroll County Correctional Institution in Carroll County, Georgia, where he is serving a 7-year sentence for one count of serious injury by vehicle. This was a job he did, being on work detail at a correctional facility. So when you hear some people talking about prisons and what happens in prisons and whether or not this should continue, you know, you kind of have to wonder, are they onto something? Well, based on some of these stories, yeah. Research shows, according to the Marshall Project, that on-screen depictions of prison life, particularly in the context of documentary and reality programming, play a significant role in shaping Americans' impressions of incarceration. But TV shows tend to skip the daily routines of prison life, work, classes, watching television, in favor of conflict and extreme behavior. MSNBC's Lookup, which debuted in 2005, was the first real breakout prison reality series, over 25 seasons and counting. When was this? Yeah, I didn't check the date on this, but over 25 seasons and counting. The Lookup franchise has overrepresented maximum security facilities as well as who's confined there. The show features people who are disproportionately white, convicted of violent crimes and serving life sentences. Netflix and other content producers have since funded an entire industry that could be described as the prison reality complex, including shows titled Jailbirds, I Am a Killer, and Inside the World's Toughest Prisons. Reality shows can only film what they can get access to through prison officials and what their incarcerators are willing to do on camera. Scripted dramas have far more leeway and are often more violent as a result. While Netflix Orange is the New Black has been critically acclaimed for representing complex characters and dramatizing systemic injustice, shows like NBC's Law and Order, SVU, and HBO's now defunct Oz make prison rape an inevitability and often a punchline. SVU, a show structured around the particular horror of sexual violence, is one of the best representations of the lurid and contradictory fascination that prison holds over viewers with little direct criminal justice system experience. The NYPD detectives on Law and Order rarely pass up an opportunity to weaponize prison gang violence or the threat of prison rape during the questioning of suspects. At the same time, entire episodes have been dedicated to exploring crucial prison issues like solitary confinement, trans women in male population prisons, and pervasive sexual assault and coercion in women's facilities. You know, when you hear things like that, you really have to stop and consider. Ask the question, when people think of prison, is it only what they see on TV that they use as reference points? Do they have anything else to go on? And I guess 9 out of 10 times, your answer would have to be no. They don't. We don't. Because we don't often stop and sit and speak with someone who has had the experience, whether wrongfully or not. Because if they actually did the crime and had to go do the time, we were fearful of them in some, even if they seemed like nice people before you knew of their conviction. As soon as you hear that, a switch goes off. And you suddenly start thinking, boy, is this person going to do something to me? I have, from my teenage days, visited prisons in Jamaica, including a famous women's prison on the island. And speaking with these inmates, listening to them present their poems, their songs, seeing the talent, and remembering that these are actual human beings caught up in a situation that has led them to be incarcerated. The important part here is that they're human beings. And yes, they may have done something that is warranting punishment. But the moment you end up being convicted of such a crime, is that the moment when you being a human being matters no more? Is that the moment when you just need to stop existing? I'm really curious about that, because there's nothing else for me to go on, is there? This has been the experience of many a community. How many of us really know of the depths that these inmates, the depths of harsh treatment that they have had to endure for whatever the duration of their sentencing? Now, after going through something like that, coming back out into free, and I use that loosely, free society, how do you expect one to behave? Now, is that going to justify their mean demeanor if they have it? Well, it doesn't really put us in a position to judge now, does it? Considering that the majority of us didn't know that things like what Adrian had gone through exist. Think of this. Your loved one is at risk of committing suicide. And either you have to pay someone, either you have to pay someone to be there with them, or you have to take up the task to be there with them. How much do you think that costs? What is let's not even look at what it, the value of it is to you, this person's loved one. How much do you think it actually costs in dollars and cents for someone to sit with you for a few hours to make sure that you don't kill yourself, or to watch over you for 6 hours out of the day? When someone is put in a hospital for treatment, and if you're thinking suicide, then more than likely it's a mental condition. So it has to be a mental facility, ideally, if you're going to get mental treatment, right? How much does that cost? And is it worth it? We suspect it should be worth it, because at least to you, for if this is your loved one. But in actual dollars and cents, does that go towards, is it more leaning on the side of minimal wage, federal minimum wage, or is it more 3-4 times that, if you're going to quantify it in dollars and cents? How about someone doing the job that Adrian had to do down in a pit, where they're shoveling this solid, semi-solid waste into this pump for it to go wherever it needs to go? No ventilation, no light. In this suit that is well, at least they get protective gear. But it is protective gear that just drains the living energy out of you and literally sucks every bit of energy that you had put in your body called food, comes out in the form of sweat. Now, of course, if there are any toxins, it helps to get rid of it, yes. So there's some kind of a positive note, because you're sweating it all out. But you're sweating it out and not being hydrated. And if you do take a break, you are rushed to get back. Oftentimes, you're not even considered for a meal, because lunch is skipped. So, when you become a convicted felon, when you become incarcerated, you no longer exist as a human being. If the purpose of prisons is to rehabilitate, is it then by means of, this is the kind of life you don't want to ever have again, so you should change your ways? Because if it was better than this, then it wouldn't mean that you would change. But here's the funny thing about punishment. There's a fine line, as there is between love and hate, between night and day. A very fine line that separates the two. And so it ends up making or breaking an individual. Here it is, someone that is going through this kind of experience, and every day as people keep oppressing them and taking advantage of them, they can't wait for the moment where they get out. And some of them get out only to do something that will end up putting them back in, because they've gotten out with so much anger. And it's not really that they're angry that they had been incarcerated. They're angry that they're no longer considered human. Now, I could be wrong in my assessment of this. And if I am, please feel free to correct me. 773-789-7839. You can call me, you can text me, you can WhatsApp me. You can hit me up whichever way you so feel fit. Hit me through my website, kevinstew.com. Just got a message here. Okay, that wasn't related to this. It was in part related to this. I'm sorry. People in prison, let me give you this little bit of information. A recording taken from the Marshall Project also. Something else to think about. People in prison are sicker than their peers on the outside. And this is confirmed by research. Prison accelerates the aging process. It shortens life expectancy and makes prisoners and staff particularly vulnerable to COVID-19. And the physical effects of prison are not just physical. The stress, boredom, and violence of prison can affect prisoners' mental health. To be sure, then, not everyone who is incarcerated or is disabled or psychologically harmed by it, wrote Craig Haney, a social psychologist. In a report on the social impact of incarceration for the Urban Institute. At the very least, prison is painful, and incarcerated persons often suffer long-term consequences from having been subjected to pain, deprivation, and extreme atypical patterns and norms of living and interacting with others. End quote. Solitary confinement darkens an already bleak picture. Some academics, international experts, and people who have spent decades in isolation call it a form of torture. And a growing body of research suggests that sustained isolation can increase levels of anxiety, depression, paranoia, and PTSD. It can also exacerbate chronic physical health problems such as obesity, high blood pressure, and asthma, and raise the risk of premature death, even after release. And so, here comes conditions like post-incarceration syndrome. And a lot of people had never heard of such a thing. I remember I had never heard of such a thing until one day by accident I came across someone's live on social media. And that led to me reaching out to Mataka Iskari, affectionately called Tak. Now, this was not his birth name. But this was a name that he got as he transitioned to the Muslim faith while incarcerated. And Tak tells a story of being released and not being able to function in free society. Not being able to function because he was so broken. Being told what to do, when to do it, and how to do it every day while incarcerated. He had problems with his girlfriend sleeping beside him because if she stirred, it was something to be alerted. Well, he had to be alert. And this is coming from the condition where you can't be too careful in prison. In the first article I read, Jerry talks about it, walking through this sea of inmates and the danger that it poses. being in a dining hall around all these inmates and the danger it poses. And we've seen it on TV shows where things become weapons with a few rubs on a wall. And how lives are quickly taken and nobody knows. They're just gone. And that's it. And the only people that actually care are the loved ones that remain for this individual that was just taken. And so, here is a story asking the question, why is Carl Taylor dead? It says, our prisons are our mental wards. One fatal case in New York shows where that can lead. This one from November of 2018. And I'll see how much I can get through this, if I can get through it quickly, to give you some type of musical therapy. On the morning of April 13, 2015, a guard at Sullivan Correctional Facility, a New York State maximum security prison, nestled deep in the woods of the Western Cat Hills, ordered a prisoner named Carl Taylor to clean his cell. By all accounts, the cell in the prison's E North housing block, a special unit for inmates classified as mentally ill, was a rancid mess. Strewn with papers and clothes, and soaked with shampoo and other liquids. Taylor, however, had balked for weeks at cleaning it. He insisted that, as part of an ongoing campaign of harassment, guards had trashed his cell and stolen his belongings while he was being held in a mental health observation unit in a separate wing of the 550-inmate prison. Taylor had been in prison since 1995, serving a minimum sentence of 27 years for a rape conviction in his hometown of Troy, New York. After his arrival in state custody, he was diagnosed with delusional disorder, a paranoid personality disorder. By 2015, he had already made two trips to the state's prison psychiatric hospital, where he'd received medication to quiet his symptoms. And while he had periods of relative calm, he had spent almost half his time behind bars. Nearly 10 years in solitary confinement, a debilitating experience that experts say disorients even the sanest persons. Not to mention the sanest of prisoners. Most witnesses to what followed on that April morning agree that after a guard opened Taylor's cell door, the stocky 51-year-old African-American inmate walked away, shouting that he wanted to be left alone and sent back to the observation unit where those in crisis are monitored by doctors and nurses. The witnesses differ entirely on what happened next. Guards say Taylor wheeled around without warning and punched the officer, a muscular 27-year-old corrections veteran named Bruce Tucker, in the face. Inmates on the cell block say Tucker, who is white, struck first, cracking Taylor over the head at least twice with his heavy wooden baton. You heard two loud bangs, an inmate named Malik Thomas recalls. Like you would hit a hard ball in baseball. Regardless of who started the violence, it ended badly. Tucker suffered a badly fractured arm and Taylor grabbed his baton and chased him across the cell tier, striking him repeatedly. Another officer had a serious concussion after also being struck and falling while trying to wrestle the baton from the prisoner. Things went much worse for Taylor. as he was being subdued by a throng of officers who had responded to the emergency. Inmates heard him rasp that he couldn't breathe. Handcuffed as he was frog-marched down a series of corridors to the prison's clinic. Within minutes of his arrival there, he was declared dead. Now think about this for a moment. We've heard, as a result of George Floyd, the cry of, I cannot breathe, at the hands of law enforcement. We've heard that to be pretty much an end cry. And this case is no different. This situation is no different. So he was frog marched down a series of corridors to a prison clinic. So he still had some life in him. So what killed him? Investigations of the incident by the State Correctional Department, State Police, and local district attorney, who put the case before a grand jury, found that Taylor's death was tragically a homicide, which primarily caused by his own poor health. So, his health is blamed on his death? He had suffered the effects of cardiac arrhythmia. An abnormal heartbeat. Now, where have we heard this before? Because when George Floyd died, this was one of the arguments that was put forward. Not taking into consideration things like the fluid in his lungs, which as a result of asphyxia is a common sign. But what are you saying, Kevin? I hear some murmurs out there in radio land and TV land. Well, suffocation, positional asphyxiation, this causes that kind of effect in the lungs. And anyone who has died by this method, the lungs pretty much tell that story. This is something I learned along the way. And this is just from reading a couple of things here and there and talking to some people who have been on some investigations that have shared this kind of information. They say, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. You just know how to make it roll better. I didn't need to go and dig for this information myself because someone had already done that legwork. I just needed to present it to those who are listening to raise that thought in their mind so that they could go and look themselves. Don't take all that I say as gospel. Go ahead and confirm it or refute it. As long as you do something with it. So Taylor has this cardiac arrhythmia. And it had been brought on by hypertension, which Taylor had a history of, following the altercation with the officers, according to the district attorney. In a press release, the DA said the guards had acted in self-defense, using a justified level of force against a violent prisoner. The DA declined to answer any further questions from reporters. And this is the way a story like that dies. Because it's a prisoner. He has lost all identity and humanity. We heard the story of Adrian being called, hey, you inmate. Not even a number. Just a classification. You inmate. In fact, the you wasn't even in there. I'm adding it. Hey, inmate. And she didn't even have the decency to say, you okay? You good? You had enough water? time to get back to work. No, 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 none of that. After inmate, no other words, it's just gestures. So you're not even worthy of any further instructions other than a gesture. I don't need to waste my breath and my words on the likes of you, the scum of what exists as life. The statement noted that Taylor had resided on a cell block for inmates with behavioral issues. But that was the only official nod to the underlying circumstances of his death, and that this fatal collision between the keepers and the kept involved one of many people with a tortured mind who wash up on the shores of America's prisons. Institutions supremely ill-equipped to handle them. Nor did any authority state the obvious. That absent the presence of a deadly weapon. In this case, a long wooden stick. And but for a guard's stubborn insistence that even a mentally ill inmate must clean his cell, this was an avoidable tragedy. Jails and prisons are among the least therapeutic environments in the world, says Alisa Roth, who toured facilities across the country for her recent book, Insane, America's Criminal Treatment of Mental Illness. You're not bringing out the best in their behavior. You're bringing out the worst in their behavior. Quoted Ross. So, let me ask this. If prisons bring out the worst behavior in people, for those who have a mental health condition, doesn't that make it that much worse? If prisons can make a sane person go mad, what would it do to a mad person? And I use mad loosely. No offense to anyone with a mental health issue. Because those of you that know me know that I take those things seriously. But what then would a prison do to an individual? Any individual. And I guess it may be a little bit different in federal prison versus state prison. But it's prison nonetheless. And it is said that federal prisons tend to be that much more comfortable, and you tend to not have some of the torture and the pain and the tragedy that you find in these state-run correctional facilities. But prison is prison nonetheless. And so, we're pretty much left with a dilemma. Because people that do things that warrant punishment, what do you do? How do you punish? If not to imprison as a deterrent to those who are looking to do the same thing. But even when imprisoned, what then? At what point do we employ the tactics of correctional behavior? And I'm not talking about shock therapy, where the thought is that because the mind has gone off to some distant land that has triggered people to do violent things, they need to be shocked back into submission. I'm not talking about that, no. I'm talking about just sitting and hearing someone out, listening for a moment, because this may be the answer. You don't know what has transpired in a person's mind that has triggered them to go off and hurt someone else, but to sit and speak with them to find out. When does that happen? So at the time of his death, Taylor was one of nearly 10,000 people in New York State correctional facilities diagnosed with a mental illness. One out of every five prisoners, roughly half, are like Taylor, considered seriously mentally ill. suffering from schizophrenia or other psychotic disorders. There are men and women who have trouble coping with daily living needs, often unable to follow orders in a setting where a military-style strictness governs every moment. In New York, the number of inmates with mental health issues has risen even as the overall number of people held in the state prisons have fallen, from a high of 72,000 in 1999 to some 48,000 currently held in the state's 54 correctional facilities, and New York is not alone. It is almost everywhere, Roth says. Even as the number of prisoners go down, the number of people incarcerated with mental illness go up. Some of you might have recalled me speaking with America's very first mental health court judge. Her name is Ginger Lerner Wren, from right here in Broward County in Florida. And she is now a lecturer on criminal justice. And she has written a book, I think two. And we've talked about this whole idea of mental health courts, because there are people that really don't belong in this prison system as we know it. Because outside of the fact that there's no proof that it works as a correctional method, it does work as a means of punishment. But correction, no. And if we go back to childhood development and we look at the difference between punishment and correction and how that affects children and if it is effective or not, well, once a man, twice a child. So maybe we need to spend twice as much time correcting the adult, because the correction wasn't done to the child, and so they probably don't know. And yes, it will take more time. Yes, it will take more effort. But where is the effort at all? When you're being treated as less than human, you're down to a number. You're down to a classification, a word, a single word that everyone is called. Inmate. Where's the human aspect? Where is it that the help comes in? And for those who are going in with mental health issues, it's already not being addressed properly as we live our daily lives in regular society, let alone to be addressed here in our prisons. A place underfunded. A place with little to no health care. A place where the least regarded are discarded. That leaves us something to think about, isn't it? The least regarded get discarded. It's a human dump. We dump those that we deem unfit for society over here in this thing called a correctional facility. What is being corrected and who is doing the correction? And for those that are in there wrongfully, by the time they get out, who do they become? Yeah, I've had the privilege and the pleasure to speak with some people that have become even better persons than they are when they were wrongfully incarcerated. But what about those who end up broken as a result? What of them? And to the family members of anyone incarcerated, whether they did the crime or not, I encourage you to stay strong. Whenever I speak with Paris Powell, some of you may be familiar with him from the series. The name of the series just slipped me. But this was where I learned of Julius Jones, the Viola Davis series, documentary series. And in one of the episodes, there are what, three episodes featuring Julius Jones, there was a man by the name of Paris Powell that was also incarcerated in Oklahoma City, in Oklahoma prison system, I should say, wrongfully. I spoke with Paris last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, and he said he's back in Oklahoma City, a place where he said he wouldn't go back. He's back in Oklahoma, and he's working with young people so that they wouldn't have to end up having faced what he did. And again, I say he was wrongfully incarcerated. So now he's back in Oklahoma trying to help underprivileged children to make better decisions. If nothing else, we know it is systematic. But nothing is impossible. Not when you have determination, not when you have hope, not when you have your eyes set on a goal. So for someone like Judge Ginger Lerner Wren, who had become America's very first mental health court judge, who is currently still doing the work to differentiate between those that need special help doing a criminal activity as defined by the law, from those who know without a doubt that what they're doing is wrong. Getting those that need that help, that kind of help, that makes a difference. Recognizing that people are still, if nothing else, human beings, that helps. Because when they get out, they're again regarded as human beings. Until you find out that they were convicts, then you look at them as half beings. We, as a population, we as a people, we need to fix that mindset. Because some of these people are better than we will ever be. So to those who are in, to those family members of those who are in, I say to you, hold strong. This is Christina Alicia, and this is our iParts Company with you guys tonight. Everyone seems to lose their key. Thank you for being a part of this broadcast. Part Company, do remember, look out for members of your community. Your community is not just the development that you live in, but it spreads far and wide. It even spreads to our prisons. So those that you pass on the bus, the plane, the boat, or the train, whether you walk, ride, or drive, these are members of your community. Do something good for one of them today, because you never know who's going to do something good for you tomorrow. My name is Kevin Studer, so I like to do it to you, for you, and with you, Monday, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. Nowadays, I'll be doing a live broadcast once every week. This week is Monday, next week it's Tuesday, the following week it's Wednesday, and we repeat that cycle. Because of training that I'm involved with right now, I can't devote that time to this broadcast. Not like that. So we do rebroadcasts on these other nights. But come back to kevinstew.com for any of the broadcasts. Take care until we meet again. Good morning, good afternoon, good day to you wherever you are in the world. From right here in South Florida, I bid you all a good night. Take care, be good, and if you can't be good at it. Greetings and salutations, one and all. You're invited to tune in to The Night Shift with DJ Kevin Stew. It airs on Mondays with Community and Finance, Tuesdays with Healthy Love, and Wednesdays with Real Talk from 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. Come spend some time interacting in the stew pot where we keep things bubbling and wind down in musical therapy. The Night Shift with DJ Kevin Stew is on kevinstew.com, where you're encouraged to have acceptance through enlightenment.